In this lessons episode, explore how strategic visibility and unconventional thinking can drive business growth. Discover how media exposure builds credibility and scales a brand. Understand how fast decisions with imperfect information create momentum and uncover why defining risk appetite and managing internal threats is critical to long-term success. You know, it's interesting. You keep mentioning your lack of basically business acumen, but yet you've built a successful company. You work with Fortune 50, Fortune 100, and you've probably marketed yourself a hell of a lot better than a lot of the people with 2,000 person plus companies. Like, how many of their CEOs have been on Rogan and Patrick David's podcast? And I'll throw myself in the mix, even though I'm not on that level yet. But I mean, but you know, so I'm seeing you're doing some. So what do you think? Consciously or maybe now subconsciously is just thinking through, what do you think differentiated you when it came to building the business, building a personal brand, marketing yourself? Because all this, and then, I mean, you're on TV too. You've done some very strategic things that anybody else coming out of the agency, anybody else coming out of the military, FBI, even police force, they have a story to tell. CIA, you know, it's a little bit sexy, but I mean, FBI is sexy. You're up high enough in the military. You do some cool shit. That's sexy too. You can build a brand around that. What made you different?
Yeah. I mean, I think, and some people have, and they've done it very well. You know what? I kind of blundered into, if we just look at the media appearances, if you just talk about doing talking head appearances for the news on national security issues or counterterrorism or whatever the topic may be. I kind of blundered into it. It was, I had moved from London to the East Coast to set up an office. We had just taken our first investors, and they, BGR, which is a fantastic lobbying firm in Washington, D.C. And so part of the agreement for the investment was open an office there with them, co-locate. And at the time, we were starting to build up a presence in Iraq, and this was early 2003, so very beginning of our first incursion there. But we had been dealing with some of the infrastructure companies. And so the point of this story is, one day, Ed Rogers, great guy, terrific individual, part of BGR and the original founding partners, he came walking to my office, knocked on the door and said, hey, Fox News needs somebody to talk about Iraq. You know, head over there. It'll be fun. You got to be kidding me. So I made some calls. They said, sure, you know, don't talk about anything stupid, but you can do it. And the agency's always been good with me that way. But so I went over, did the appearance and found out after the first couple that, you know, honestly, as long as you don't say anything stupid, you don't fall off your chair. Right. You know, the news networks need to fill up a lot of time. Yeah. And I just happened to have a lot of, you know, experience and background in certain areas and was willing to go on and talk about that. And so some of the outlets, including Fox, they were very good. You know, they were very good to me. And then I discovered that I wasn't getting paid for any of it. But what they would do is they would put the company name on the bottom, like, you know, with the company. And once I realized that, then we were off to the races. Because like I said earlier, there was no way we could have, as a startup, afforded that sort of marketing. It just wasn't going to happen. And so, you know, I realized that, you know, that was an edge, right? We had an opportunity there. And then everything else just sort of kind of fell into place, I suppose.
No, I was going to say, it's amazing how, you know, to have a good story, you just have to have a cool career, do something incredible, and then speak about it. But you'd be surprised at how many people just don't feel comfortable leaning into that. And then you did. Now it's
working out. I mean, I think the agency, again, because of what I was doing in operations and you know, you do have sometimes an overblown sense of confidence. And, you know, so I think that part of it never, and I genuinely like talking about issues of the day. I spend a great deal of time focused on that. I have a lot of friends in a lot of different places, and we end up, you know, banging on about, you know, the current crises.
There's never a shortage of them. So
there's never a shortage. And so it helps if you find it all interesting, right? You can't fake that part of it. It's like, but I you know, again, I think, you know, luck kind of fell into it again. And then, you know, once I realized that it was certainly beneficial, It wasn't like I was going to turn down opportunities.
Yeah, no, obviously. Another one of the rules that you mentioned, which I thought was interesting, it just in terms of velocity and getting shit done, it's number four. It's get off the X. What does that mean exactly? Where does that come from in an agency context? And then how does that translate into business, startup, entrepreneurship?
Well, in an operational sense, not just the agency, but the military and other organizations, the X means that it is essentially an ambush site. So, I mean, A, you don't want to be on the ambush site to begin
Yeah,
with. So
fair.
the
Okay.
idea is you spend a lot of time training to recognize indicators of a potential ambush, right? And but if you do get on the X, if you're unfortunate and for whatever reason you land on that spot, then you have to be able to get off the X. You have to get out of there, right? And in operational terms, that's a tough thing because everything starts locking up, right? And you start getting blinders, and your hearing goes, and in any difficult situation, right? You have to start relying on big muscle memory, and so that's again why training is so important. Why it's not enough just to do some training. You have to constantly review it. But anyway, the point is, in business, what it means is, I think anyway, in my opinion, this is what, again, there's no hard and fast, I suppose, to any of this, but from my perspective, it simply means knowing how to make decisions quickly with imperfect information, right? Because once you land in the shit from an operational perspective, right, you gotta take action, right? You don't have time to sit around and hope that you get all the data, where are all the hostile elements? What the hell is happening? You have to start making decisions, right? And it's the same in business, right? If you wait for all the data sets to come in, if you wait for all the analysis to be done on whatever it may be, something bad's going to happen, right? Or the competition's going to have your lunch, or you're going to lose the opportunity, or your reputation's going to be damaged, whatever it might be. So it really comes down to how do you, learn to, and also a lot of this is about how do you impart that ability to your personnel, to all the folks that are working with you, to make these decisions again with imperfect.
Notion is a success story partner. Now, every week I'm juggling podcast prep and newsletter deadlines and agency work. And one thing that used to eat all my time was compiling status updates across all these different projects so I could see where everything's at. Now, with Notion's new custom agents, that's just handled now. I set up a status update agent that automatically scans my team's progress. It pulls everything together and sends out a report without me even having to touch it. Here's what makes Notion different. Notion is an AI-powered connected workspace for teams. Notion brings all your notes, your docs, your projects into one space that just works. It's seamless, it's flexible, it's powerful, and it's actually fun to use. And with AI built right into it, you spend less time switching between tools and apps and more time creating great work. And now with custom agents, the busy work that used to take hours runs itself. Most AI still waits for you to prompt it, but custom agents runs on schedules and triggers. So one person just sets it up and it becomes a shared resource for the whole team. Think of them like AI teammates with a specific job. So try custom agents now at notion.com/story. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/story to try custom agents today. And when you use our link, you're supporting our show. Upwork is a success story partner. Now, one of the biggest lessons I learned building businesses is that you don't have to do it all yourself. The fastest growing companies, they are not working harder. They're delegating smarter. And that's where Upwork comes in. Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across web and software development and data and analytics and marketing and business operations and more. We're talking over 125 categories of specialized talent. So wherever the skill gap is, you can fill it fast without weeks of recruiting or committing to a full-time hire. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping the role before you ever spend a dollar. And with Business Plus, you get access to the top 1% of talent on Upwork. And with AI-powered shortlisting, that matches you to the right person in under 6 hours. Contracts, payments, all handled in one place. It's free to sign up. Job posting is super easy. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That is Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to grow your business. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com. Warby Parker is a success story partner. Now, buying glasses used to be one of those things that I just dreaded. You walk in somewhere, everything's overpriced, the styles are all outdated, and somehow you leave spending way more than you planned on frames that you're not even sure you like. I just wanted it to be simple. That's why I switched to Warby Parker. I'm never going back. The virtual try-on alone sold me. You open your phone, you point the camera, and you're seeing the frames on your face in real time. So there's no more guessing. There's no more hoping they look good when they show up. Prescription glasses start at $95. That's 95. And the quality is better than the stuff that I paid 3, 4, 5 times more for in store. They also do contacts, eye exams, sunglasses, everything's in one place. And if you want to walk in somewhere, they've got over 300 stores. All Success Story podcast listeners get 15% off plus free shipping when you buy 2 or more pairs of prescription glasses at warbyparker.com/success. That's 15% off when you buy 2 or more pairs at warbyparker.com/success and tell them Success Story sent you.
Information.
And so when you're making these decisions with imperfect information, as a CEO, is that just being a leader for a period of time, or is there actual practice that you can do to make sure that when shit hits the fan, you don't screw it up?
Yeah, there's a lot to this. Part of it is not that complicated. Part of it is, knowing your risk appetite, which is another, element of.
I was actually curious about that one too, only because I thought that business inherently comes with risk. So how do you not have a risk appetite if you're building something?
Well, you'd be surprised. And even, going back to, the Intel community, look, Intel organizations, which, by definition are risk-taking operations, they go through periods of time where they become risk averse, right? It's because, they've had blowback from, some operation, or they've gotten their ass kicked up on Capitol Hill too many times.
Yeah.
And so, suddenly you've got a cycle where, management is avoiding risks. And I've seen a couple of those cycles sweep through the agency over the years, and that's a bad thing. Yeah. And you have to understand what, And when you're understanding what your risk appetite is, it also means you have to understand what your shareholders or your investors or your board of advisors' risk appetite is. You have to understand what the client's risk appetite is, for sure, when you're talking about, working for them and providing, strategic intelligence or guidance or due diligence or whatever it may be. And, that's a key part of it. And that informs a lot of other decisions that you make, including how do you make decisions with imperfect information.
When you're talking about risk appetite, I'm interested because you deal with businesses that are dealing with threats. So in a business landscape, advice for executives, CEOs, founders, what are the threats that you see really plaguing businesses right now? And I know there's specific examples that would not transcend every industry or every category, but you see macro level, what are some things that people should think about?
Well, I think any company of any size, and it doesn't really matter how big it is, because small businesses can be damaged quicker and faster and, more broadly than large corporations at times from some of these, but the insider threat is always something that we end up talking about. And the insider threat can mean a variety of things, right? It can mean within a pharmaceutical company, you've got somebody who has been recruited, developed by a competitor to provide, intellectual property or key information regarding research and development. It could mean they could have been compromised by, Chinese intelligence service, right? I mean, that sounds, oh my God, that's spooky, but look.
Yeah.
That's happened to Dow. It's happened to DuPont. It's happened to a wide variety of companies, right? Where state-sponsored intel services have targeted the private sector, gone after individuals who they've identified through the typical recruitment process or recruitment cycle, and just like an intel service would, and go after these individuals who can provide then inside information, economic espionage, basically. So that is, and so that's an example of an insider threat. An insider threat can also be, a disgruntled employee who decides, to do enormous damage because perhaps they work in IT or wherever they may have access to very sensitive information. It could be an accounting issue in finance. So the insider threat is something that companies need to be focused on. Cybersecurity is obviously a big buzzword and has been for a while. And that is a whole separate conversation in terms of the ability of companies to understand what those threats are, to stay on top of those threats, to understand how to respond, when to incorporate outside law enforcement assistance. The FBI is working very hard now to try to establish better dialogue with the private sector so that they can better inform the private sector where these threats are coming from. And it's just the potential for damage to a company. When we talk about, and you mentioned it early on, when you talk about like within operations or within the agency, failure to do the right thing can lead to, death or yeah. serious, goat rope, then, I think with the private sector, you're talking about the crushing of a company. You're talking about the, irreparable damage to a brand. You're talking about, massive losses, layoffs. There's all sorts of damage that can be done through companies not paying attention. Look at, SVB, Silicon Valley Bank, probably not the best example of like that sort of insider threat. That seemed more like it was a bunch of tools trying to make decisions that were completely inappropriate. You also have to worry about the insider tool threat, apparently.
Thanks for tuning in. If you found this valuable, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. And if you want to dive deeper into this conversation, check out the links in the description to watch the full episode. See you in the next one.